We kick off hour number three of this segment brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union, the official credit union of Three and Out. They're celebrating 85 years right here in East Tennessee, and they'd love to sign you up as a member this summer. Helping their members grow financially, that's their mission at the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. You can move upward and forward with them as they help people right here in East Tennessee. All the services a bank can provide, but they're of course, a credit union, and they can beat those rates being in that field. Check out all the services at tvacreditunion.com. And right now, don't forget, you help your kids learn to save with a savings account. Anybody 17 years and under can sign up, and there's a higher dividend payment on the first $500. So start them off right with the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Well, before you had the whole breakdown, Houston, I kind of wanted to dream that maybe our 8-4, we'd actually, you know, beaten Georgia. I would sacrifice one of these other kind of coin flip-ish games for that. But while we're talking about the Bulldogs, did you see that there's going to be no alcohol in the Peach State? At least not in Sanford Stadium.
No, there will be. You just got to donate $25,000 to...
At least not in the cheap seats of Sanford Stadium.
$25,000 will get you the ability to then purchase beer at an incredibly...
Outside the hedges, as we'll call it. You know, because you play the game between the hedges, so...
Well, all things are sold outside the hedges.
It's true. Yeah. Good point by you, Houston.
Thanks.
No alcohol for Georgia fans. I would be irate. Is this the most, like, this is one of the most...
I mean, Bama's not doing it either.
Tone-deaf decisions, like, do these people not under... I feel like this is a little sliver of evidence at these other schools. It's not as overt as we saw at Tennessee, where you had people that had no clue what their own fan base was even about. But it feels like that, like, if you ran a poll of, you know, people that have attended a Georgia game, if you could pull them all from the last 4 years, wouldn't it be overwhelming in favor of this? I mean, I saw the best point ever made about this debate, if there even is one. Somebody said, if you're against selling alcohol in Neyland Stadium because you're afraid of being around all the drunk people, you've obviously never been to Neyland Stadium. Like, people are already inebriated.
And I guess they've never been to any type of professional sporting event at all.
Isn't this Georgia and Alabama and whoever else decides not to at least try and get something done soon? Isn't this just like listening to the wrong crowd? Like, you're listening to the people
vocal minority
who don't go to the games. Which is the most back-assward way of thinking about this. You should be serving the people's interest.
But they're the people that are talking.
But they're the people that are the loudest. It's the yeah.
It's the NFL when everyone was saying, I'm going to boycott if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, you're not watching the games anyway, so we shouldn't really care. But we do, so we're going to alienate our real fans to please people who don't give a damn. I mean, essentially nothing changes, right? They're not taking something away.
Right.
But just does seem strange that you have the ability to do this, to make some money. Two studies now, Texas and West Virginia, have shown that they have less alcohol-related incidents when they sell alcohol at the venue. Like, so I don't know if that's it. I don't know if this is a, well, we already said that you have to have donated $25,000 and we don't want to take that back. That would look pretty stupid on our part if we gave special privilege to our big donors and then took it away for everybody. So is this a, I mean, it's still a dumb decision, but is this a save face for our big donors and say, hey, we're not going to let everyone else buy beer this year, only you guys, because you are so special. Why wouldn't you just give those people a card for like $1 off each beer?
I don't think the donors care.
I wouldn't think so. But I don't know. I think there's probably a group of donors. I'm not saying all the Georgia donors who want to say, well, I can buy a beer because I've donated $25,000 over the last 5 years.
Don't they have like a waiter or waitress or a shorter line? I mean, that's the benefit of being in the luxury suites.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily luxury suites. I just think you have to be on some list. I mean, there's a lot of people who donate a lot of money who don't want to sit in the box. They just want to have
a regular
seat.
There's nowhere to drink your beer or go get your beer if you're sitting in the south end zone.
I agree.
You know.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I'm just trying to make heads or tails of what Georgia's doing.
Well, tell people the good Tennessee news on this front.
Shay Payne. Shay Payne 14 on Twitter. Tweets yesterday, people, I have news. And it's a picture of, I think this is at the Vol shop.
All right.
In Neyland Stadium. Yeah. Application for beer permit. Name, Neyland Stadium, Aramark Suites. Address, 1300 Philip Fulmer Way. For sale at this location, premise consumption on and off. With dancing, no. Kick a last second field goal to beat Georgia and tell me there won't be some dancing going on. They might want to change
that
one.
Is that really dancing? I don't know.
Yeah. The band plays music. Okay. You don't think anybody dances to it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Shut up. Beer board meeting date, June 18th, 2019 at 5 p.m. Tennessee has officially filed for a location beer permit at Neyland Stadium. The board will meet in 5 days. Aramark Suites, people were worried that meant, oh no, that just means in the suites. No. Aramark Suites would be any concession stand that Aramark, who is Tennessee's concession vendor, food vendor, drink vendor, any suite in Neyland Stadium that they operate, so all the concession stands, beer permit on file. Well, they're working on it. So it appears Tennessee's trying to get it cleared. They're trying to get it pushed through. And if the meeting goes well next week, Neyland Stadium will have alcohol in 2019. We'll know pretty quickly, I suppose.
Is it not refreshing that Tennessee administration is doing all the right things now?
It's weird.
I
really don't know how to feel.
It doesn't feel real.
It is odd.
Like, they're making all the right decisions.
All the right moves. I mean, some people didn't like the Rick Barnes move, but if you just look at wins and losses and a coach wanting to leave or not, and you give him a big contract to keep him, I think it's a good move.
I mean, you could have theoretically offered a new contract that wasn't quite as high as it was, but with hindsight, there's no way to know if that would have worked or not. So there's no real point in debating it, I guess. You know, like, because with any lower contract, that might have been the difference between keeping and losing them. So,
well, and
it's kind of like winning a football game after a questionable call that worked out. And so then the debate could be endless of whether that questionable call was actually good or bad. It's like, well, we won the game, so it was good enough, even if it might not have been the best way to run that play, or I don't know.
Right. Well, to the Barnes point, I think we can sit here and say it could have been too much. I feel like majority of the fan base is happy he's back as head coach.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. There are arguments for it, but that's a strong move.
Right.
And it's not a – if you don't worry about the money amount, if you just look at it as Philip Fulmer locking down a successful coach, it's the right move. Philip Fulmer giving Jeremy Pruitt all the financial answers he needs for hiring new coaches. It's a good move. I realize everyone kind of looks at football, and you can maybe kind of look at the end result for basketball and say it wasn't ideal, but this was a pretty positive year at Tennessee. He made the move on Holly Warlick and got in Kelly Jolly Harper, who, inside news, has impressed a lot of people in a short time. Football appears to be headed in the right direction. I get it that people are in a wait-and-see mode, as they should be. Baseball had a great year. Basketball had a great year. Softball had a great year. There haven't been the embarrassing hide-your-head-in-the-sand moments that we have come so used to enduring.
Definitely not major ones. I mean, the Summer Smoky thing was kind of like
vomit, I'm talking national, but like, yeah, you know.
Not like five-star hearts.
Right. Wins and losses, maybe not, but you have not been embarrassed by your university this year. And now they've filed for the beer permit, which to some people doesn't matter. To some people it does. And I'm of the I don't know how many beers I will purchase in Neyland Stadium this next year, but the fact that Tennessee has the option to do it, and instead of kicking that can down the road and doing the Georgia thing or the Bama thing of and they're just saying, well, we're going to do it. It's available to us. Why wouldn't we do this? If some of our fans want it, they can do it. If there's issues, we'll handle those as they come. You get into a beer-related incident, you're not coming back this year. They can handle that in ways that are going to make sense. But there are some people who don't want beer. I don't think they're going to be just so disappointed if there's not. But a lot of people are going to be excited and love the idea that they can have a cold one watching Tennessee play football. So you're kind of like the Georgia thing. You're catering to the majority here. Tennessee has not done that in a long, long time. It's either been the super wealthy or super loud minority that they've listened to. But really, since Shiano Sunday, you've seen Tennessee listen to the majority of the fan base. That is a big deal, because I'm not kidding. It has been a long time since you felt like Tennessee was making decisions based on the interests of the fan base at large instead of this rich guy, this loud group over here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you want to leave the cup on, I guess, but it's been nice to not have to use it for a while.
It has. We'll come back with more. Stick with us right here on 3 and Out. Welcome back to 3 and Out here, Fan Run Radio. Talk a lot of Tennessee football. If you miss any portion of the show, check out the podcast. As always, subscribe on iTunes. That way you can download it right to your device. And give us a great rating if you like the shows. Now it's time to switch to some basketball, though, I think, Houston. A little bit of a primer for what Kerry Blackshear Jr. might be thinking. A little bit. I always wonder when people put this type of stuff out. Like it, mm-hmm. I've learned over the years that depending on who you're talking to, kind of frames how you say certain things. So when media members post like the situation for a player and what they're thinking. I don't know. Maybe it's a byproduct of leaving the cup on, kind of as you mentioned about other situations. Maybe it's just being jaded. I don't know. But I always wonder, like, okay, well, who said that and why and how do you know? But typically, the way things are written, you can kind of make an educated guess on how accurate or something may or may not be. This felt like it at least was logical. From this Gene Henley tweet. Do you have it there? Or do you want me to read it?
I've got it.
Okay.
Would you like me to
fire away?
Start at the top?
A little inside information here.
Gene Henley covers Tennessee athletics for the Times Free Press out of Chattanooga. Note on Kerry Blackshear. He tweeted this yesterday right after the show. From what I've heard, individual exposure, i.e. being the man, will have little to do with his college choice. He wants to go to a place where he has the best chance to make a deep postseason run before going to the NBA. He continues. He played at Virginia Tech, so it's not like he's been off people's radar for 4 years. The exposure angle won't work for him. Are we good enough to make a deep postseason run will be the biggest question for all schools involved. Regarding Tennessee, Henley says this. If Tennessee can sell KB here, that Turner, Bowden, Josiah James, plus the potential waiver of Uros Plavsic to mature slowly. Actually, there was a parenthesis there that gets confusing. Basically, he says if Plavsic gets the waiver, that'll allow Fulkerson and Johnson to be role players. And for the projects like Burns, Gaines, Pember, and Kent to mature slowly, he thinks Tennessee will have a really good chance of landing Kerry Blackshear Jr. He says, on paper, Kentucky has the best chance for a deep run, but that front court is loaded with Richards, Montgomery, Bucknell transfer already. Can Tennessee beat out Cal when it comes to convincing Kerry Blackshear on a postseason run? Henley says, unless something has changed in the past 48 hours, Calipari is the only coach at this point to have had an in-home visit with Blackshear. But what can't be discounted is that Kerry Blackshear really likes Barnes and would be a perfect fit for Tennessee's system.
The only thing that doesn't make sense to me about that is I don't know what he means by a perfect fit for Rick Barnes' system. Like, that makes no sense.
I think he means you saw what Grant Williams did and how he features that type of position, and Kerry Blackshear could come in and slide right into it.
As someone that thinks pretty highly of their basketball IQ, I guess, I just disagree. I don't think he featured Grant Williams at all. I think they ran offense, and Grant Williams demanded the basketball in certain spots on the floor. I mean, most of their offense was
Hang on. Early in the year, the offense did not start until Grant Williams got a touch. And then as teams started to focus on Grant Williams, it went elsewhere.
Okay, but that's not system. That is the system. That's emphasis on how the guys play together.
Let's nuance the word system here. If the philosophy of the coach is within the framework of the offense, I want this player to touch it first every time, that is still system basketball.
Well, okay.
That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying don't read too much into that.
That's minutia.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, like, Rick Barnes doesn't have a system, like plays, sets, motion that would feature Kerry Blackshear, especially not more than Calipari. I mean, Calipari came in with P.J. Washington and showed you how to feature a guy. You know, like, we never did that with Grant. It drove me crazy. So I guess that's what I'm saying. That's the only way that's kind of to my original point. It's not that he's completely wrong about fit. It's that the way he said that makes me think, are you kind of coloring me here a little bit? Because if he had said Kerry Blackshear Jr. would fit in really well with the way Tennessee plays, that is the way you should write that. That's all I'm saying.
I think that's what he means. But
yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Let's not get caught up on perfect fit for the system. I think he's saying that you saw the success Grant Williams had in Tennessee's offense. Kerry Blackshear could come in and have similar success. That's all I think he's saying.
The best part is that he loves Barnes. I mean, that's the best feather in your cap right now. It's kind of a minus that he doesn't really care about being the guy, and you kind of were on that yesterday.
Well, it isn't a minus, right? I guess you don't want, if you're Rick Barnes, and we've seen this, like, you don't want an ego-driven basketball team. So, yes. So maybe to your other point, maybe that kind of is perfect for Blackshear. It's like, I can come in and not be the guy, but still be an important part of this team. Whereas Kentucky, the exposure's there. That's not really what he wants. But they're also a really good team. But the question is, if he goes to Kentucky with the loaded front court, yeah, you might make a deep postseason run, but do you want to make that run playing 10 minutes a night? 15 minutes a night? I don't know how much he would play at Kentucky. I'm just hypothetically speaking. They're the most loaded team he's considering. Where's the trade-off there? Because, I mean, if I'm a basketball player in the NBA and I say something like, I just want to win a championship, that sounds good, but don't you also want to – I mean, you want to play. You don't want to go sit on the end of the Warriors bench all year,
right?
And then they get deep into the postseason and you're not an impact player. So maybe he doesn't want to be some superstar, but my guess is if he's trying to get to the NBA, which he is, you want to make sure you're playing enough minutes to do that, to show scouts, to show executives, hey, this guy can get it done. If he goes to Kentucky, does he get enough minutes? I don't know. The exposure is there for Kentucky, but is it there for Kerry Blackshear? And then if you come to Tennessee, it's a mix, but also kind of the opposite. You're going to be the guy. You're going to get the exposure. But is there enough talent around you for a deep postseason run? And I can already hear people in their brains thinking, oh, postseason Rick Barnes, no chance of a deep run here. Why would he come here? We're not going to go deep into the postseason. So that's the balance. If it's 20 minutes a night at Kentucky versus 33 at Tennessee, then what becomes the trade-off? Because let's say Kentucky, like, what do we say? Like, they're guaranteed the Sweet 16. Tennessee would probably be guaranteed a spot in the tournament if you get Kerry Blackshear. Is that just hypothetically, like, that's probably where we have Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Like, they're a Sweet 16-ish team next year, minimum. Tennessee with Blackshear is in the tournament, but are they a round of 32 team, a Sweet 16 team? Are they possibly an Elite 8 team? So that's what Rick Barnes has to sell Blackshear on. Hey, no, I get it. We lost these four guys. They were a really big part of this team. But with what we're going to do with Turner and Bowden and James, if we add you, all of a sudden, with the added depth in the post and our new look offense that we're going to bust out, which I don't know if that's true, we think we can actually be better in the postseason than we were last year. We think we can be an Elite Eight, Final Four team if you come.
One of the first things you said, Houston, is he doesn't care about being the guy, so to speak.
Gene Headley.
I actually think that bodes well for Tennessee because Barnes isn't going to sit there and say, oh, yeah, you know, if you come here, you're the number one priority. You're the man. Like, he didn't even do that last year. You saw times where he was like, oh, Turner, you know, Turner's our late game shot maker. Bones what drives this, this team.
Yeah.
Jordan Bowden.
Is there more pressure on him if he goes to Kentucky or Tennessee?
Probably Kentucky.
Like,
because
defining pressure is a weird thing.
Yeah, I was already thinking of ways to do that both directions.
Yeah, me too.
I would say Kentucky because you don't right now we don't expect a lot from Tennessee, and even when you add Blackshear, you just said it, like, we have a spot in the tournament. Do you expect Tennessee to be a Sweet 16 team? Not you shouldn't. You expect Kentucky to at least make the Sweet 16.
Individual pressure, though, if he goes to Kentucky, like, maybe on himself, is there more pressure if he goes to Kentucky?
I think there's always more pressure at Kentucky.
I agree.
Probably.
With you.
Yeah, it's
for
crazy.
Any player.
I mean, they're nuts.
So if he scored 15 points a night and he goes to Kentucky and he starts 10 or 11,
they could probably win games through the first half of the season, and he's scoring 8 or 9, and they'd be like freaking out. Like, I thought this Kerry Blackshear kid was going to be better.
Right.
It's like, well, he's part of your machine that's winning games. Whereas if he does that at Tennessee, if he's scoring 8 or 9 a night here and we're winning, Tennessee fans are like, we're winning.
Everyone's ecstatic.
Yeah.
Hmm.
There's a dark horse, in my opinion, and again, I don't know who leads the way. Obviously, I want him to come to Tennessee, but Michigan State's intriguing to me, and I don't know why. That's not being talked about more. Cassius Winston came back. And then if Blackshear goes there, he is in the starting lineup with, like, Josh Langford and Aaron Henry. Like, and
you want to talk about who goes deep in tournaments.
Right, I mean, Tom Izzo.
Tom Izzo could coach 5 skunks to the, you know, Sweet 16.
Doubtful.
But
I don't know. No one would get near him, so maybe there's a chance.
It wouldn't surprise me if somehow Michigan State ended up Landon Blackshear, but if he likes Barnes, then it's hard not to like Barnes. If you're,
the more I learn about Kerry Blackshear, the more
you're
I think
in
he's.
Love, aren't you?
I mean, I like him as a player, but that's separate from what I'm about to discuss. The more I learn about him, he seems like the type of person who not only fits what Tennessee has become under Rick Barnes as far as the culture, but who is seeking that out in a way. And I'm Kentucky, probably not, but Gonzaga probably has a similar mold. I think Michigan State probably also has a similar mold as far as, I don't want to say starless teams, but I do want to say selfless teams. Like, Cal kind of has to convince his teams to be selfless.
Yeah.
But even then, it almost seems unnatural. Cal's situation is always, you guys are all the best that I could get, but we have to play together. Whereas Rick Barnes, Few, Izzo, it's a, we got you here because you want that and we want that. The more I learn about Kerry Blackshear, it seems like if he gets around this team, if he gets around Rick Barnes, that's not going to be a thing that turns him away. I'm not saying you ultimately get him, but if he likes Rick Barnes, that's a huge plus. And then just what I've learned about him in this short process, this feels like Josiah James saying, everywhere I went, people told me I was the man, that I was the best, that I was going to come in and start, blah, 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 blah. I go to Tennessee and they just treat me like I'm a guy. They just wanted to talk basketball. They wanted to talk life. It seems like Kerry Blackshear is the type of player, type of person that when he gets here, that will resonate with him. And the good news for Tennessee fans and for Rick Barnes and for this program is that it's definitely not fake. I think you can manufacture that on a visit if you're Kentucky. If you're Coach K, I think you can manufacture that feeling a little bit. I think when Rick Barnes and this team demonstrate the culture, people realize it's the real deal. And last year, I think, absolutely played that out.
Well, and everyone thinks he's the – not everyone thinks. He is the best grad transfer in this class.
Yes.
And to your point about the culture and his character, you wouldn't know it if you were just looking at
right
websites and articles. It should. I think this is important too. He was a top 120 recruit in 2015, I believe, and there wasn't really any big names on his radar. So he's kind of flown under the radar, like Grant Williams, yeah. Admiral Schofield.
I don't want to say like came from nothing, but this is not a guy who took the easy road. This is not the five-star who went to Kentucky and was really good. And, you know, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, it fits. Doesn't mean you get him, but
it makes sense.
It would not surprise me at all. It, like, everything just kind of seems to be adding up to where Tennessee, obviously, I think, has a really, really good shot here. He's in town tomorrow and Saturday. I mean, I don't like doing the prediction thing, but I feel like Tennessee's going to be right there. Like, if he doesn't come to Tennessee, it will not be by much, in my opinion, based on everything I'm hearing and based on everything I've learned about Kerry Blackshear.
We'll come back. Hour three rolls on here. Stick with us on Fox Sports Knoxville. This segment of the program brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of 3NL Best Friends Week. It's about to come to an end, so make sure you swing by Gold's Gym. You can get in with a zero enrollment right now through the end of the week at your local Gold's Gym. Check out goldsgym.com to find a location nearest you. And as always, you can work out for free with the free 3-day VIP pass. You want to try out Gold's Gym before you join? Let's go to Davey Hudson with today's Gold's Gym Fitness Tip of the Day.
Today's Gold's Gym Fitness Tip of the Day, don't forget about the push-up. You know, the push-up is one of the world's greatest exercises, and doing it with proper form is as simple as this cue. Maintain a rigid body line from the top of your head to your heels throughout the push. With this in mind, you won't sag your hips, hump your back, or bubble up your butt. Keep your elbows tucked in towards your sides as you lower your body and push back up. Another thing that I like to do at the end of some workouts is to do 150 push-ups in 10 minutes. And I know what you're thinking, wow, that sounds like a lot. But break it down like this. It's just 15 push-ups for 1 minute. You do 15 push-ups at the beginning of a minute.
Meth.
And if you do one per second, then you're able to take the next 45 seconds off. Just something to keep in mind, and maybe you want to try into one of your workout routines. And that is today's Gold's Gym Fitness Tip of the Day.
That's Davey Hudson, former 12-week challenge winner at Gold's Gym. It changed his life, and I'm not even kidding when I say that. So if you've been kind of wanting to change yours, Gold's Gym, the official gym of 3NOUT, tell me about you heard about him right here with Davey Hudson, 3NOUT, and Fan Run Radio. Man, just thinking during the break, if we get Kerry Blackshear Jr., I'm trying to keep the cup on this situation, not think about that, but it really does change everything. I mean, I'll be excited for basketball season because once you, I think once you've had success, and then even as you kind of have to cycle, even if you have to cycle down, you kind of, especially with so many new players, you know, I'd be excited to see how that goes and how it kind of happens. But if we are able to add him, that would
Who starts at the five if you get him? Do you have a prediction? Like, is it Folke or is it Burns?
I don't even know if Bowden starts next season. I don't know if Bowden wants to keep him coming off the bench.
You don't have enough guards for him not to start. He has to start. It's either him or Jalen Johnson.
So Turner, Bowden.
Turner, Bowden, James Blackshear.
And
Pons? At the five?
Well,
Fulkerson?
I'd be
at
Pons
the five?
At the four and Blackshear play the five. I mean, do people even. I mean, even back when I was coaching, no one really differentiated between the four and the five much anymore. I mean, they do for inbounds and special situations, but in terms of like where you're playing in the motion offense.
Who's the other starter is the question.
I'd go Burns.
DJ Burns. Just,
the guy we haven't seen, you're just throwing him out there?
Okay. Well, you haven't
one seen. Of those guys is leaving, first of all, and then like
not any of the ones I've mentioned.
I mean, I don't know. Some people are just kind of guessing at this point. Some people have thought maybe that Pons could be on that list.
I mean, we haven't seen Cam Hua either.
Yeah, sure.
Or Euros.
Does he get a waiver? Does he not?
Fulkerson's coming off the bench.
That's
for
right.
Energy.
If Euros gets the waiver, it could be him.
I don't know. 7-1. Rick Barnes might start John Fulkerson with Kevin Blackshear and those three guards. I mean, he's been here.
I wouldn't hate it.
Then you let the other guys kind of
come in
have
and
less
score.
Pressure
he's
and come
in.
Off
yeah.
the bench. Fulkerson can guard, and he's really athletic. People kind of pigeonhole him into these comments that just don't. They're pretty.
It's a
stereotype.
It's a pigment stereotype.
Oh yeah,
but he's actually a fast.
I mean, he was in the dunk contest.
That's the thing.
At the pre-show thing.
He's one of the fastest guys on the team. Probably not named Bowden or Turner. If not the fastest, he can absolutely soar. He's just clumsy.
I'm not sure how quick he is. It's weird. He's explosive up, but I'm not sure he's explosive side to side.
I think he's quick.
Well, he's explosive side to side. Like he'd be great in the like the broad jump, but he would not be fast in the three cone. Like his quick pitter patter turning, not going to be great. But his push off
when he doesn't fall down.
But his push off, his explosion, like with one big giant, you know, lunge is incredible. One of Stripes says Lamonte, Bowden, James, Blackshear, Burns. It's just hard because, you know,
hard for me to say Burns when I haven't even seen him play or really heard much about him. Are they going to do a Midnight Madness thing this year? Should they? Should they and do it right, hopefully?
If they will do it right.
You think people would last show
year,
up for that?
Last year was
if they
awful.
Hyped it? If you get Blackshear, wouldn't it be wise to do a big
– Yeah.
season kickoff event type thing?
I've always thought it would be cool to do like an alumni game. And so we've lost the Rocky Top League, but if you had guys like Chisholm and Lofton, Juwan Smith, all those guys come back and just play the team, so you still have like a little exhibition game.
That'd be kind of fun.
You're going to draw fans.
That'd be
better
that'd
than
be,
what?
That'd be the best way to draw them, frankly.
Better than last year.
Last year's event was the worst Tennessee event I've ever been to on campus. For anything. That includes stuff the sororities and fraternities put on. I'll just leave it there. Yeah, so I do hope they change something about it.
Be a good way to sell some tickets. Yeah, season tickets.
Yeah. I mean, you would think those would be hot commodities, especially if you get Blackshear.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it feels like if you get him, I mean, even if you don't.
Yeah, sure.
It makes
That's
sense.
What I mean. It's still exciting to me.
But if you get him, I just think that getting a player like that, because that's the main issue, right? Like, we've seen Bowden, we've seen Turner, we know they're good. We haven't seen Burns, haven't seen James, haven't seen Uros, but Blackshear has a lot of highlights. Like, that's a guy you can, I'm not saying you overhype him, I'm just saying you use him to accentuate the hype. Like, he could be the hype focal point, even if he's not the quote-unquote focal point of your team. Feels like the fan base if you get black shear, all of a sudden things change from, well, we'll have to just wait and see to, I think this team's going to be pretty good. You've already got people saying that. Jimmy Dykes said that this week. He said, I got a feeling we're going to be sleeping on Tennessee because they lost so much, but that's still a pretty talented team, and that's some good coaches. If you get Blackshear, you have that empirical evidence, right? Like, you have the guy that you can say, look what he did against Duke, Florida State. Look what he did against Virginia. This guy plays well in big games. Whereas for the rest of the team, you can't necessarily say, not to say Turner won't, Bowden won't, Burns won't, but you know this guy has done it before. Seems like the hype meter gets ratcheted up if you're able to get Blackshear, you know, in the next couple weeks.
That'd be nice. We'll come back. Final segment. Only one left here on Three and Out. Stick with us. It's Fan Run Radio. Final segment of the program, Three and Out, right here on Fan Run Radio. Appreciate you starting your day with us. I guess U.S. Open's like teeing off.
Yep.
So we'll have that right talk about now. Tomorrow. It'll be fun.
We'll have Friday game six recap.
Yep.
Congrats to the St. Louis Blues, your Stanley Cup winners last night after a shellacking of Boston.
Tomorrow's going to be a great
Bennington.
Day.
What a night.
Yeah, I mean,
St. Louis goalie was sensational.
You know the story about him, right?
No.
He was like fourth on their depth chart. He had to be called up from the minors.
Really? Boy, he delivered last night. He was unstoppable. At one point, I think Boston had 10 shots on goal, and St. Louis had 4, and St. Louis led 2-0. They were just – their shots were good.
Yeah, I wanted
to Boston shots were the legs. Boston shots were good, too, but Bennington was –
oh, he was
on something.
He made a kick save. I think it was 2-0 when he made this one. I mean, it could have. But he made that save, and I was like, that might have just won the.
Yeah, that's a backbreaker.
Pretty crazy. I've been watching some of the women's World Cup. Actually, I've enjoyed it.
I'll get back in on Sunday.
Yesterday there were two good matches with the teams that had both won their first matches playing against each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched a lot of France and Norway, two really good teams. It was good. I don't know, some women's sports I just really, you know, enjoy watching. Some others I just don't.
I like watching soccer. Some people don't. I enjoy it.
So, one of our favorite sports is college basketball.
On the way out the door today.
Yeah?
We've been waiting on this for 2 years.
Well, we're still kind of waiting, right?
We're still waiting, okay. But we've been waiting.
Right, we have been waiting.
Was it Pete Thamel?
I think so.
14 seeds go win the tournament.
Right. Dennis Dodd yesterday for CBS Sports. He is a moron. But he did write this. At least 6 college basketball programs will be notified of major NCAA violations by this summer. I don't know exactly what that means. He then says by early July. I don't know why you wouldn't
just say that.
Or just say this summer, not by this summer.
Okay.
That's weird. The article states, at least 6 Division I men's basketball programs will receive notices of allegations for Level 1 violations from the NCAA by the summer. Shut up. He's so stupid.
It's already summer.
Stemming from the federal government. No, it's not. Not technically.
Technically, it'll be another week.
Stemming from the federal government's recently completed investigation of the sport per an NCAA official. 2 of these programs that will be notified are, quote, high profile.
Mm.
The early speculation by those with knowledge of the situation suggests that Arizona and Auburn will be among those 2. Other schools mentioned in the FBI's investigation include Oklahoma State, Southern California, LSU. I'm assuming LSU is not considered high profile, but they could be among the 6.
Mm, yeah.
I don't know that Auburn would have been considered high profile until they make the Final 4. But schools mentioned Arizona, Auburn, USC, Oklahoma State, LSU, I don't know who the six would be. Probably Duke.
They're not high profile at all.
We buy this? We think this is legit?
I kind of half buy it and half, you know, I'll wait and see. Like, I can't.
Also, what happens if you get this notice of allegations? Like, if Auburn gets hit, like, is Pearl just done? Do they write it out?
No, you get the notice of allegations, and then you respond, right? And sometimes when schools respond, they say, yeah, we've looked into this. This is all the stuff that happened. Here's our self-imposed penalty. Please don't spank us anymore. And then the NCAA says either accepts it or rejects it or, you know, fires back again, right?
Kansas and Louisville are also in this conversation. There's no way Kansas is getting touched, so I'm going to throw them out.
Kansas, what's that player for them? They've had a player. He was ineligible and back. And then of course, DeAndre Ayton with Arizona. Auburn had all the assistant coaches.
An NCAA official did say that any wiretap introduced into evidence in the federal trial will be used. So I guess they were able to subpoena that?
Sorry, buddy.
That's why.
Didn't the FBI at one point say, yeah, we're not giving that to the NCAA. We don't give a bleep about them. I could have swore somebody from the FBI said that. They're like, it does, or they basically said, we don't have to give this to the NCAA. Like, we can or don't have, you know, we only care about the law here. The NCAA is not law. That's the whole problem with the NCAA. That's why they don't have subpoena power. That's why they're not policemen. They can't do a search.
So this is funny. One of the most significant pieces of information to emerge from the trials was a wiretap involving Kansas assistant Kurt Townsend. On the tap, Townsend can be heard discussing the exact financial arrangement it would take to land then number one recruit, Zion Williamson. However, that call was not entered into evidence for the trial. Wilcox says, thusly, that was leaked and we don't have access to it. Got to protect Duke and Kansas. Makes sense. We can use the information that was put in the media, but we would take that information, and when we sit down and talk with the coach, we would use it as a talking point, not necessarily hard evidence. Wilcox made a point to say the NCAA has individuals in court during multiple trials, and they listened to everything that was said.
But they weren't in court. But that's what
I thought it was specifically reported that they were not in court.
I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe it when they're punished. I'll believe it when Bruce Pearl is not sweating up the sidelines for the Auburn Tigers and when Will Wade isn't walking around in his frumpy dress shirts.
LSU's toast.
Eventually. Probably.
Duke, Kansas State. Maybe.
Tune in again tomorrow at 7. The Blitz is next right here on Fan Run Radio.